Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, we have former SNL cast member and writer, comedic actor, Siobhan Fallon Hogan, coming up. Very funny. Also the news as well. First, let me tell you about Slumber Cloud. More than comfortable, they utilize the most advanced bedding technology for a truly rested life. Patented, technology not found in any other bedding products to proactively manage temperature fluctuations through the night. Yes, they make a great product. I have the comforter. It is, there's nothing worse than, you know, getting cold or getting hot in the middle of the night. You wake up, you roll around, you need Slumber Cloud. The technology was originally used in NASA spacesuits, so you know it's the real deal. Slumber Cloud temperature regulating bedding products from sheets to mattress pads can be found at slumbercloud.com. Save 10% on your purchase with our exclusive code Carolla10. Slumbercloud.com. Save 10% with Carolla10.
And now, a totally innocuous word that sounds dirty when Mike Dawson says it.
Soaking.
Ew. Let's get back to the Adam Carolla Show.
Siobhan Fallon Hogan has joined us. She has a new movie out called Rush. It's available in theaters as well as streaming on Apple and Amazon coming up on Friday. Wrote, produced, and stars in the film. So congratulations, Siobhan.
Thanks, Adam. Thanks for having me on. I really, really appreciate it.
Full disclosure, I just watched a trailer, which was very well done and riveting. I've not seen the whole movie. I think Gina has and Brian has as well, so we can they can speak to it better than I. But I know what a monumental undertaking writing and starring in and producing a movie.
Oh my God!
It's the lowest percentage thing you'll ever try in life, including, you know, walking on a tightrope across Niagara Falls.
Seriously. And I've been to Niagara Falls. My sister said to me, Siobhan, this is like, I'm from upstate, so they have really thick accents. Like, Siobhan, this is like having a baby. I go, Mary, this is like having quintuplets. I had no idea what I'm getting into here. Like, we got to get to the finish line on Friday, but no, it's been a great experience, but wow, it's a lot of work.
Yeah, so how does this start? Let's go through the process, and then we'll get to SNL and many other endeavors.
So the deal was, is, you know, I've been an actress forever, 555,000 years, and I've done one-woman shows over the years. About 3 years ago, I said, maybe we should do another one-woman show. But, you know, doing one-woman show, you go out afterwards, and, you know, you're not like, it's not like fun where you're like, oh, wasn't that fun when we did that scene, because it's just you. So I thought, well, I've been in this business long enough. Let me see if I can write a movie. So I write this movie, and then I just basically called in all the troops of all the people that I've known from over the years. Robert Patrick plays my husband, you know, Robert from the Terminator. Sure. And I just called all my Perry Gilpin from Frasier, Jake Weary, who's like totally taken off in Animal Kingdom. Now he was in a TV show. I was like, guys, I wrote this movie. Oh. So I said it to them. They're like, we're in. So, but I had done three films with Lars von Trier over in Denmark. And so I said, I just been to the Cannes Film Festival with Matt Dillon. I did The House That Jack Built. Anyway, so I sent it over to the producers over there, and they called me. They go, Siobhan, we want to co-produce. And I was like, holy crap, maybe this is good. So anyway, so then I just went to all my friends who were high rollers, and I was like, how'd you like to invest in a movie? So, and then I put like, I don't even really know how to do Facebook or any of that stuff at that time. And I was like, hey, I'm doing a movie in town. I live in Rumson, New Jersey now. And I said, does anybody want to rent rooms for the crew? Well, literally people stepped up and they were like, we'll take three. And you know what film crews are like, it looks like, you know, the circus, and they're the best people ever, but they're not like people from where I live. Either am I, by the way. So anyway, so it was like, it takes a village. And we did this movie. It'll be 2 years ago, September 27th. And then thank God it sold. And now, you know, then COVID, you know, it was a little delay there. So now Vertical bought it, and now I'm like a dog and pony show helping. Like, Vertical Entertainment's awesome, but but in addition, I said to them, hey, can I get this into independence? So I'm literally on the phones calling around to people, like getting into independence all over the country, as well as the major markets that Vertical's doing.
Siobhan's one of many former SNL stars to go on to do Lars von Trier films.
Yes.
The jokes are fun. Trier is a Danish director. It was very heady.
That's a very high level. Yeah. I always know that people are kind of sophisticated if they know Lars von Trier. I mean, by the way, I'm not in any way sophisticated, so I don't know how I ever worked that. But yeah, so I mean, isn't it actually Avi Kaufman, who's the casting director on this, she took a shot on me years ago because I was pegged as comedy only, you know? I'd done SNL, I'd done even like classic. I did Shakespeare in the Park, but I was playing Phoebe and As You Like It. So she said, Siobhan, there's this role. I think you could do it. And Lars was directing This Dancer in the Dark. It ended up winning the Cannes Film Festival.
With Bjork.
And, yeah. With Bjork, yeah. And so I was up all night with my daughter, Bernadette, who's 26, and she was a terrible baby, and she had an ear infection, so I was able to cry on command the next day, and I got the part.
That's awesome. Oh, wait, whole question. Sorry, just following up on casting. A friend of the show, Phil Rosenthal, his daughter's in this movie. She's very good. Is she someone you knew and reached out to, or did she just come up for casting?
Oh, no. Okay, so Monica Rosenthal and I are best friends forever.
There you go.
And we were at this law firm that we worked with. We had no skills. I was a receptionist. I got all my friends on board to be at this highfalutin law firm back in, you know, just when I got out of school. And we were in New York making like 2 cents. And so I would get all my friends jobs. So I got Monica a job because we met in an improv class. The Groundlings was in New York for about 2 seconds. And so I knew Monica before she met Phil. I mean, no, she knew Phil then, but they started dating before they were married. So Lily, I've known since she was a baby. And Ben Rosenthal's in it too. So I said, these guys, you know, Lily would be good to play my daughter. Because I needed like a girl that was kind of like hip and kind of like a teenager that was kind of like, you know, really cool. And then Ben's a frat boy. So yeah, so, and my son's in it. My son's a frat boy. My daughter's a snotty sorority girl. You know, so I knew they'd be perfect.
Well, I got to say, just right out of the gate of the movie, I was so, I don't mean to say it took me out of the world at all. It was just worth sort of noting and commenting. The one of the first scenes where the phone rings and it's early in the morning and that whole setup of like, talk about a slice of life. I mean, this has happened to everyone, but it seemed, I really felt I was a fly on the wall in somebody's actual house. I mean, your writing is so, and I mean this with the utmost respect, normal and relatable.
Well, I really thank you for that, first of all. Okay, so I have 3 kids. And, you know, so Adam, you haven't seen it yet. So, you know, the mom's making the sandwiches and, you know, every mother thinks this is my time in the morning to myself. But then, of course, you grab that last 10 minutes of sleep and you're all effed up for the rest of the day because you're like, shit, got off the wrong. And you're trying to make these sandwiches. And so she's saying the rosary and she's like, you know, and then she's like drops the F-bomb. Then she's like, get up. So it's like literally the way I live my dysfunctional, weird life. We live. This is so embarrassing. 2.5 blocks from school. I would take my daughter, Sinead, who plays the hippie and plays Jake Weary's girlfriend. She was kind of OCD. So she'd have to get to school early. And then I would circle back to get my son, Peter, who plays the bad boy frat boy, to take him at 7:40 before the bell rang. Inevitably late, but he could work the system. He knew how to like get in and get downstairs through a window. So basically that's the way I live my life. You know, you have that little minute or 5 minutes in the car before when you slam your kids or I make them, I'm like, you better start praying or you're going to hell, you idiots.
I know. I love she drops up. Sorry, sister.
Something. What about when I say, put your skirts down, girls, you look like hookers. Which, because my oldest daughter went to Catholic school and I was like, you girls look like freaking hookers. I'm like, shut up, get out of the car. Anyway.
Something happened that didn't exist when I was a kid, which is we started listening to kids and respecting their wishes.
It's unfortunate.
Because I got the same thing. Like, my daughter wants to be driven to school and my son walks to school, which it's the same difference, whether there's 2 kids in the car or one.
She just wants to pass him and yell at him.
I got to get up and drive him. Now, when I was a kid, it would just be like, no, go walk or do whatever you want. But we're not doing this. Like, you would just say no. People just go no.
We are the generation that our parents, at least I was. My parents were like, I was the worst athlete you ever met, but I did somehow get onto the JV. You know, you're a really bad athlete when you're a senior and you're on JV softball and you don't play.
Right.
And my mother came to one game. She had 5 kids and I saw her. She was a big reader and she was reading. And then she said to me after, Siobhan, do I ever have to do that again? I mean, and people here, you know, they're like, my kid is great athlete. I'm like, look, you know who's a good athlete in second grade. You just like, you can see the fast ones. You might as well say, hey, listen, just forget it. You're not an athlete. But somehow we've created these monsters where, you know, they're like, what do you, oh, this is another thing in my school with the parents dropping off the lunches from the local restaurant.
Oh, yeah.
What? Oh, horrors.
I mean, I got peanut butter and jelly. I swear to the Holy Bible. Every single day, and an Archway oatmeal cookie for 18 years.
Peanut butter not allowed in school.
I got half of Nate Wittenberg's peanut butter and jelly because I didn't have my own.
I got my best friend Judy Tennant. She was the youngest of seven. Her mother got to the point where she gave up because I would just eat all her dessert. So and she made this thing called Congo bars. They were like chocolate chip bars. So she'd always make two, but not just two, three, because I'd think it was funny to eat both of them.
Yeah, I don't think kids know the age old technique of bumming things. Like we would bum food. Right. We were more pigeons than we were students.
Totally.
Like sit around. There were the kids whose parents loved them, who were responsible, who made them a decent lunch. And then we would just sit next to them hoping like a pigeon, like they'd throw a scrap out and we'd grab it.
You would know, you'd stare them down and make it so difficult to enjoy it, or that you'd steal some. I remember I had a friend, Joyce, and she'd get up to go to the bathroom. I'd like eat something of hers, like her chips or something. She'd come back and be like, and I'd be like, what? She's like, seriously, did you eat my chips? I'm like, no, that's so weird. Why would I eat your chips? Same with my sister, Sheila. We had some form of potatoes every single night of my life in my house. My mother would always burn the boiled potatoes, and you'd hear it like, damn, that meant the water boiled out of the pan and she burned the potatoes. But we all love the potato skins of the baked potato.
Oh yeah.
And I'd always make it a mission for my sister, Sheila. She was the third child. She was kind of fat, but now she's slim and I get fat. And she's like, nah, see, because you mocked me for so long for being fat. Now you're fat. So I would take her potato skins and she'd be like, I could psychologically outsmart her, and she would just start crying because sometimes she would remember she ate it or I really did take it.
I remember once my favorite dish was mashed potatoes, but my mom would never make them because it took 20 minutes. So one day I got my mashed potatoes for dinner, but I also got into trouble and got grounded. And I remember just taking the pot of mashed potatoes to my room and just putting them between my legs with the wooden spoon and just eating the mashed potatoes right out of the pot.
You are Oliver Twist.
Yeah,
Oliver Twist.
Yes, very Oliver Twisty.
One time my father, I hated spinach so much. And he's like, you will stay at this table until you eat your spinach. And I just sat there for like 3 hours. So I was like, there's no way that I'm eating this spinach. And we had this ugly green shag rug. And I would just like slowly just drop the spinach into the rug. So just like mixed in.
Smart.
Delightful.
So Adam, I got to tell you something too. I read that you're a big boxer.
Yes.
Is that true?
Yes. It was true. Yes.
So guess who my great uncle, my mother, Jane, she was the best. She just passed. She was 96. Her uncle was Packy McFarland. Did you know Packy, the great welterweight, lightweight?
What years would he have fought? Packy McFarland.
Well, he died in 1936. No. So, but he, did you ever go to Bill's Gay 90s in New York City?
I went to Bill's by 90s in the 2000s. So we'd upgraded from gay.
So good. That's so now. Well, Bill's Gay 90s actually closed, but there was all the boxers' pictures always up, and Packy McFarland's picture was there.
Died at age 47.
Yes. Well, he was Irish.
Packy McFarland was
Irish?
He was strictly Irish anyway.
Yeah, there's nothing better than old boxing pictures.
Yeah.
I
love it. Yeah.
We're looking at him.
That's a Packy McFarland.
Looking at him now.
Yeah.
Was he a champion, did you say?
They said he won more fights than anyone and never was a world champion, but he had some, you know, incredible record. He was a tiny little guy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, we always kind of talk about a lot of Irish fighters and a lot of Italian fighters, a lot of Jewish fighters. You know, everyone fought back then. Everyone who was sort of fresh to this country fought
Yes.
Here's something dated. He died of strep, a strep infection.
Yeah.
Yes. When we were kids, my mother was always like, it's not funny. Because, I, you know, if you got strep, I would always stop taking my pills after like 3 days. And she'd be like, Siobhan, you can't drive strep like Packy.
How did you get from this upbringing to SNL?
Well, my father was literally hilarious, Bill Fallon. And he was one of 11 from Syracuse. And, you know, like most families really emphasize being smart. And so, like, I was not good in school at all because I was just really interested in making other kids laugh. And I really didn't pay attention. I'm sure I had some diagnosis of some sort. And so, you know, like, I remember one time I got a D in college in astronomy. And my dad was like, Shimani, come on, like, a D, that's 65%. Like, look at this pie. I had two pieces. And I had two big pieces. There's 65% left. That's good. That's a good grade. So, but we were really, like, it was really emphasized to be funny. So, and that's what the whole, I mean, I had tons of cousins, like, you know, like we were the small family of five. So it was always like being funny was like the thing. So, I went to New York, I went to Catholic University down in Washington, D.C. for my master's in acting, which was like paying money to learn how to breathe and pretend you're someone else for 2 years. And so then I went to New York, had no skills, and, I was going to quit the business. And my father's like, why don't you get the hell home, go to law school at night and start a dinner theater? And I was like, ugh. But then this friend of mine who I got a job with at the law firm I was telling you about, she said, there's an improv comedy group. Why don't you audition? So just when I was really about to quit, I was really kind of down in the dumps. And so my father was always like, yeah, you're never down in the dumps. You had unearned effervescence.
Unearned.
I love that.
So anyway, this one guy that directed the one woman show I did. No. What am I talking about? I'm jumping ahead of myself. The improv comedy said, why don't you write a one woman show? So I did. And then I pretended I was my own publicist. And I went around to critics with a helium balloon and because it was around Halloween and a candy of a pumpkin that was like shiny stuff. And I was like, hi, I'm Siobhan Fallon's publicist. You should come to her show. And then I went, like, I had all my friends go to like TKTS and hand out these cards, you know, to come to my show. So anyway, reviewers came. I got a good review. Then I brought it out to LA and I rented out this little tiny theater. I had $7,000 to my name that I earned. And I rented out this theater and I was teaching English as a second language to Japanese kids at the time.
Which theater did you rent out?
It was on Santa Monica. Remember they used to have those 99 seats or left?
Sure. Yeah, Equity Waiver. Yeah.
Yeah, it was, oh, I can't remember the name of it, isn't it?
Because I'm only asking because when I was at the Groundlings, in between taking classes at the Groundlings, they'd have all these satellite classes that were like the Cornet Theater and all these little theaters that were just spread out all over the place. Little theaters.
It was in, I can't remember. I want to say it was like Santa Monica and Western, something around like there. And anyway, my entire audience was Japanese because I was teaching English. So they didn't know what the hell I was saying. But reviewers came. I got a good review. And then Saturday Night Live came. And they said, you have an audition. And Seinfeld came. Wow. And then I got on Seinfeld.
So to like the show. They came to your one-woman show?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
So how were the nerves that night? Like, I mean, did you know in advance SNL and or Seinfeld was coming?
I did. I did know Pam Thomas she was a casting person from SNL came and I knew she was coming. You know, I was really lucky. I never really got that nervous. I was nervous. I'll tell you what, I was really nervous for the Saturday Night Live audition. Really nervous. But I wasn't that nervous when in the audience. If I can kind of like hide behind a character, I'm not that nervous. Like I never did stand up and that's a whole different, you know, that it's like I could never stand up and tell jokes, but if I can hide behind a character, then I'm okay.
What was the SNL audition like?
So they flew me to New York. There was like 15 other girls. And in the audience, what's the cast? It was, you know, Dana Carvey and Mike Myers and Adam Sandler and Chris Farley and the, all NBC, but you know, you didn't care about the suits. I didn't know who they were. You cared about the cast. So, you know, you had like 3 minutes to do all these different characters. So I had like a wig and it was like, you know, like your bag of tricks. So it went really well. And afterwards we all went out. I became great friends with Chris Farley. You know, we're basically exact same background, same humor. I mean, I would never say I'm as funny as Chris, but I'm saying, you know, we totally related. And Adam Sandler is a great guy. We still keep in touch. And Chris Rock, they were the new guys, you know? Mm-hmm. So they're like, Siobhan, I think it's you. And I was like, holy crap. So they let us, you know, everything's nocturnal there. So early in the morning, they told us. And I called home. I called my mother and I said, put Dad on the phone. And she's like, Shivani went golfing. And so anyway, I was like, Mom, I got a Saturday Night Live. So I called up the golf course in Casanova, really from this little town outside of Syracuse. And I was like, is my father there? And they're like, no, Shivani's on the seventh hole. I go, you got to go get him. It's an emergency. So in he comes and he was huge. He looked like Tip O'Neill. And they're like, what's going on, Shivani? I go, Dad, I'm going to be on Saturday Night Live. He's like, out of sight, sweetheart. And he's like, guys, my daughter's going to be on Saturday Night Live. All right, dynamite, sweetheart. I got to go back. I got to get back out there. And he hangs up.
As I was telling my audience, I think a weekend and a half ago, I was hanging around with Jim Farley, which is Chris Farley's cousin, I guess. He's the CEO and the president of Ford Motor Company.
Wow.
He looks just like Chris Farley.
Oh, wow.
There's a resemblance.
Well, it's Chris Farley if Chris Farley raced cars and ran Ford versus, you know, stayed up with hookers all night. But they look exactly the same. They both have the same energy and everything. We'll see if we can get you a picture of that.
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
He looks like him in the face.
Wow.
And
he's
a Farley, except for he's the president of Ford Motor Company.
That's amazing. Well, I got to tell you, Chris Farley, he was the greatest guy. And, you know, when his memorial, you would have expected some like celebrity to get up and talk about him. But this guy was a shut-in. Chris used to visit the shut-ins and bring food to them. He was like a little saint with a terrible addiction problem, you know. And I credit Chris for, listen, I was a little too much for guys. You know, I talk too much. As you can tell, I can't stop talking. So I like this guy, Peter Hogan, my husband now, who lived a block from me. So we'd go out after the show. I'd be like, Chris, I really like him. And he's like, come on, Sharon, let's go. And we'd go and he'd buzz the buzzer. We'd be like, Peter, wake up, you fat bastard. And Peter played rugby and played New York rugby. And so did Chris, was a big rugby player. He's like, get out of bed. It's time for a scrum down. And so Peter would inevitably let us in. And if it wasn't for Chris, I never would have met Peter. I mean, Peter would have really liked me because I kind of forced my way in through Chris.
Yeah, that's interesting. The put people together gene. Jimmy Kimmel has that gene. He's like, you should meet this person. I'm going to put you guys together. So he does. He like assembles people. It's like human Lego land or something. But it's really the kindest thing you can do. It's just you hear about somebody and you go, you need to talk to this person. Mm-hmm. You guys would love each other. I'm going to facilitate that.
I do that. I totally matchmake people. I think you have to be really blunt and be like, look, you guys should meet. You guys would get married. You can't just like be like, you might like each other. You got to like just get right to it.
Yeah. And, you know, circling back to being a student and maybe thinking you had some sort of disability that would have been diagnosed by today's standards. But think about it. I was the same horrible student. But think about really what you're asking people to do. You're taking kids with a sense of humor, not all of them, but some had a sense of humor. And you're taking 13-year-olds and 14-year-olds. All I want to do is be running around, getting someone in a headlock, jumping off a roof into a swimming pool, riding a dirt bike or something. And you're putting them into a classroom with no air conditioning. And you're saying, sit there silently while this 63-year-old loser pontificates about the Civil War. How could you not have that reaction?
Listen, I told you I have three kids. My son is hilarious. I swear to God, the discipline guy had my number on speed dial every Friday. Sharon, it's Mr. Sarles, really nice guy. Peter, today there's a girl who's very upset. Peter didn't learn one thing in school, but he did learn what a Punnett square was, which is, I guess that is, if you have enough of them, your hair color becomes something. And she had a boyfriend that was a ginger, you know, red hair. And he's like, she told Peter told the girl that if she marries the boy, she's going to have ginger kids. I was like, do you know what color my hair is?
Right.
It was so ridiculous. You couldn't do anything funny. And of course, I thought everything was funny that my son did, which was not good. I remember they called me in junior year and they're like, I had to meet like, it was like a firing squad. Like everybody was there. They're like, there's 3 weeks to go. And PETA has a 24 average in math. Now, if PETA doesn't bring it up, he's going to have to go to summer school. And I'm like, over my dead body, am I driving this freaking kid to summer school? Because it wasn't even close by. So I say, because it strikes me really funny, I'm like, because the more serious they thought it was, the funnier I thought it was. And I was like, okay, so I understand that. And the head of the department was not only the head of the math, she was math and science. So talk about not relate, right?
Right.
So she's like, no humor. And I said, is there any way he could maybe do some extra credit? And she's like, what do you think? There's 3 weeks to go with a 24 average. I mean, this kid is screwed. So I go, so she says, like what? And I said, like, I was thinking if he could do like a poster of a decimal. And they look at me like, no wonder the kid's a jerk. The mother's a jerk too. And I go, like, think of it like modern art, like just a dot. It could really like maybe teach the younger kids what a decimal was. Well, I swear to God, they just started like padding his grades because they just wanted him out of there. You know, like, we want to deal with her.
Deal with his mom again.
Well, yes.
Going back to, so this, my movie Rushed with the four kids in it, the mother is a helicopter mother. And we have these bizarre things with the cell phones where you contact these kids constantly. And the mother gets in the car and she's like, call your brother. And the kids are like, mom, it's weird. But she harasses the kid about this fraternity pledge. And that's just a weird thing too, that you're like able to get a hold of your kid in college and be like, are you there? Are you learning the pledge? Are you up? What are you doing? Are you safe? You know, it's like this bizarre culture that we're in.
Well, and there's no, and that's why it was so realistic, because it's not setting her up as a two-dimensional, like, oh, she's the worst, she's a nag, or, oh, she's so sweet. She's both. She's trying to help him. She knows this is important to him. She tells him what words to punch. She cares, but she's driving him insane.
Yeah. Well, I think the movie really works. We're getting like a lot of good reviews and everything, which I'm so insanely grateful for. Because when funny people have really sad things happen to them, when this kid's in this fraternity hazing incident, it's so sad to see funny people be crushed, you know, and how do they handle it? And in the movie, you know, she prays her career end off, but she swears while she's doing it. And when the tables turn, that's what gets her through, is her humor and her faith. You know, I mean, not to be icky, but that's the truth.
Hey, Siobhan, can you hang out with us and do the news with us?
I would love to.
All right. First, let me hit Tommy John Apollo. Tommy John's newest and most advanced men's underwear, performance-grade dry-release fabric blend exclusive to Tommy John. You can't get it anywhere else. Just Tommy John Apollo men's underwear. Proven to keep you drier and up to 7 degrees cooler than regular cotton underwear. No sticking, no chafing. Soft, supportive, stretch, fit for the perfect fit every time. Available in sizes up to 4XL. Over 15 million pairs sold. Tommy John doesn't have customers. They have fanatics. I'm wearing mine now. Once you get into the Tommy Johns, you will not go back to what you're currently wearing. I promise you that. And the t-shirts, socks, everything as well. Loungewear. All Tommy John underwear, by the way, just like the new Apollo, comes with the best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free. Guarantee, right, Dawson?
Right now, get 20% off your first order at TommyJohn.com/Adam. Go to TommyJohn.com/Adam for 20% off. TommyJohn.com/Adam. See site for details.
All right, Siobhan, hang out. We'll take a quick break. Come back with the news right after this. The Jordan Harbinger Show. Well, we love Jordan Harbinger. He's been on the show a few times. It's a different kind of sponsor for this show. The Jordan Harbinger Show is a wide range of fascinating topics and heavy-hitting guests, like a hostage negotiator from the FBI who gives techniques on how to get people that trust you, or a cinematographer who discovered a lost city in the jungle. The Jordan Harbinger Show, Apple named it one of the best of 2018. You always find something useful to apply to your own life, not pop psychology. Jordan is the real deal, speaks a bunch of languages, has been in a lot of hairy situations around the world, and lays a lot of knowledge on you. We enjoy the show, and I think you will too. Search for the Jordan Harbinger Show. That is H-A-R-B as in boy, I-N as in Nancy, G-E-R on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Breaking viral. Weird crime protest politics. Give me news with Gino Grad. Stuff they saw on TMZ. Joe Biden. Kamala. Big news with Gina. Gina Grad.
News with Gina Grad.
Well, the New York Post reports that disgraced Governor Andrew Cuomo has gone down fighting, using his farewell address to defiantly declare his treatment as unfair, slam the attorney general's report alleging he sexually harassed staffers as an orchestrated political firecracker. It was a super long speech. I'm going to spare you 9% of it. Here's the first 90 seconds of Cuomo's farewell speech.
To share some thoughts with you that I've been thinking about over the past few days. There will be another time to talk about the truth and ethics of the recent situation involving me. But let me say now that when government politicizes allegations and the headlines condemn without facts, you undermine the justice system. And that doesn't serve women, and it doesn't serve men or society. Of course, everyone has a right to come forward. And we applaud their bravery and courage in doing so. But allegations must still be scrutinized and verified. Whether made by a woman or a man, that is our basic justice system. I understand that there are moments of intense political pressure and media frenzy that cause a rush to judgment. But that is not right. It's not fair or sustainable. Facts still matter. A firecracker can start a stampede, but at one point everyone looks around and says, why are we running? The truth is ultimately always.
I have a couple thoughts. One is I'm fascinated with the American sign people that are in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, do they have sign interpreters, American Sign Language people, for somber occasions? Do they have the victorious one? Do they have the one where he's proclaiming victory over COVID and has a new book out?
At a concert for song lyrics, they'll get into his context.
I was just going to tell you, Kaylin, can you find the... I'll send
you. Yeah, there should be the bad news sign person. You know, it's the person that has the right look, the right tone facially, moving in a way. Then there's a celebration. It's just like when they show the pictures of the person, like accused of molestation. They're not smiling. They have the frowny face picture. Here's another rule that I would go for. Tell me if you guys would go for this rule. Cuomo puts, everything's loaded into the teleprompter these days,
right?
Tell me if you would like this rule for any politician or anybody who has to do the, farewell speech.
Resignation speech, or any
speech of any kind. Either we can load it into the teleprompter and you can just stick to the script and go verbatim, but you have to do 3 shots of Jaeger.
Ooh.
Or.
Go on.
No shots, but you got to wing it. You know what I mean? Like, get the beats down and just kind of stick with the beats. But we're not going to have this whole thing rolling in front of you. You do the 3 shots of Jaeger and you can have it scripted, or you can be sober and speak from the heart.
I love this.
Both good ideas.
Yeah.
Really good.
I would watch.
I like the idea of them having to do it on the fly. But 3 shots of Jaeger, that would be good too.
Because the 3 shots of Jaeger would, A, make it a little tough to get through the prompt, but there'd be a lot of sidebar. They're like, many women have come together, like Allison, that bitch.
Like I'd touch her.
Yeah. Yuck. Jesus Christ. I'd rather touch a family member. Anyway, and they'd go back to the script.
That's real good. By the way, his guy, that we've seen his ASL guy. Does he not look a lot like Ted Cruz with a beard? Put him back up.
Yes,
he looks
look
so much like Ted Cruz.
It's hard because his postage stamp is
It helps.
So small.
By the way, New York Post also reports that Cuomo's hired private movers, two U-Haul trucks, to cart his personal belongings to his sister. Do you know who his sister's married to?
No.
So she's Maria Cuomo Cole. She's married to fashion designer mogul Kenneth Cole.
Oh, yeah.
So all his stuff's getting shipped over there.
Wait, Westchester. Am I still on?
You are.
I got to tell you guys something.
Please.
My daughter is Bernadette Hogan, who is just was made Albany Bureau Chief of the New York Post. She's 26. She broke the nursing home story. She wrote that U-Haul story.
What?
She had three covers the week Cuomo stepped down.
Wow. Yeah.
She's 26. She's a little pit bull.
No kidding.
So you know, blowing our minds.
You know, during COVID when he'd be like, Bernadette, she's only 5'2". She'd be like right in the front. And so she lived up in Albany and she interviewed those people from the nursing homes whose parents were stuck in there. And she broke that story. And then she just talk about a little Irish fighter like Packy McFarland. So they just made her Albany Bureau Chief at 26.
Wow.
All those stories. The U-Haul story is hers. She's unbelievable.
So Cuomo hates her.
What? Listen, I don't know about that. But let's just say I don't think he'll be coming to her Bureau Chief celebration party.
Oh, my God.
Bureau Chief at 26.
Imagine that.
No.
She got out of Marist College. And she went to New York City and she worked for nothing. She interned for New York One and she didn't like New York because she's a horseback rider and she liked the outdoors. She made me move from New York City when she was seven. She's like, why are we living in New York City? I'm like, so we moved to New Jersey. I was like, why are we living in New Jersey? So anyway, I literally sacrificed my entire life for this freaking kid. She didn't like New York. She goes up to Albany and she like was, you know, reporting on fires and stuff like that. And then the New York Post, she was 23 years old. They wanted this guy that she was working with, who was like a big deal, like 45, but he was on TV. And he's like, no, but there's this kid, Bernadette Hogan, and I think that she's something. So she never had a book out of her hand. She's nothing like me. Like, she's well-read. And my Aunt Beth Fallon wrote for the Daily News, which is weird, too. Like, she had her own column for years. Long and short of it, she goes in with this big editor, and he's probably thinking, what the heck is this kid doing here? So he says, Bernadette, could you tell us why you think that you should be given a job at the New York Post? And she's like, well, now, my husband's family's from the Village in New York. They own the White Horse Tavern. She's like, well, my dad is, his family owned the White Horse Tavern and they ran it. And my mom is from upstate. We moved to New Jersey. So I think I really resonate with the tri-state. Frick. So they brought in all the other editors and she got the job. She was a nervous wreck. And I said to her, I said, Bernard, let me tell you something. She was so nervous at first. My husband was like, listen, Bernadette, just go for like a little one inch article. I was like, no, listen, screw that. I got to Saturday Night Live and I felt lucky to be there. I was like, don't think you're lucky to be there. You deserve to be there. I said, you go for it. I said, stop thinking about it like everybody, thousands and thousands of people reading your articles. Pretend it's high school. I go, you're a great writer in high school. You're a great writer in college. Just go for it. 1 week later, she had a cover.
Oh my God.
Wow. Was that the nursing home situation or is that another story?
No, you want to know what the first cover was?
Yeah.
De Blasio making the grocery stores have plastic, get rid of the plastic bags.
National story.
Yeah. And then she, you know, she worked hard and then COVID, you know, she was in the right place at the right time. Then this is crazy. She's always had kind of good luck. She was supposed to go down to New York City because no one knew that Cuomo was going to step down. So the attorney general, she did not leak that in any way. Bernadette was on her way down to New York to do a door knock. And you guys probably know, being, you know, in the business, that's like, it's kind of a scary thing for a kid. And, you know, not that she's a kid, but you have to go to the door and say, can I get a quote? And, you know, they could be like, you know, it's New York. You could get killed. So I'm like really worried. And they said, get to Long Island. Letitia's going to break this. So there she was, front and center. And then she had three covers that week.
Wow. Unbelievable.
Yeah. And she's been on like MS, like all shows, all TV shows. And you just have to see her because she's like, I do an imitation of her where they go, Bernadette, so can you tell us about, you know, like, they're like, did he ever harass you? And she's like, right. So I'm a journalist and my job is to, and she will not, she can, but she always starts with right. And she knows, she does that play politics. She just tells the story and that's it.
Wow.
That's something.
Yeah, that's your niece?
Daughter.
That's my daughter.
Oh, Jesus, sorry. I got the last name's got to the last, it's the hyphenated last name that got
it's,
me.
It's because
me
my husband up. My husband, like I said, he was a real New Yorker, the family owned the White Horse Tavern that, and he's like, you know, when these kids are little, my poor mother, she never had a chance to read us a book. There was too many of us. The poor woman never had a garden. So we had three kids. So he would literally read my daughter Shakespeare. And I'd be like, oh, for God's sake, put the Shakespeare away. She's two or three. I hate this. Then he made me take her to French class in New York City. We had a place out in Breezy Point, New York, that was like all cops and firemen. I used to have to drive her to French class in New York City. I was like, oh, my God. And I'm so embarrassed because it worked. He'd be like, we're going to go to the Metropolitan Museum of Art. I would literally be like, can we please leave? It's so hot and I'm so hungry. Can we get a bagel? And he'd be like, no, kids, this is Renoir over here. You know, if you watch the brush strokes, this is what it is. Okay. Look at the way. So she absorbed everything like a sponge. And now she's, you know, whistling Dixie at the Post.
Unbelievable.
Brian, did you have something?
I have a tangential question because you made me think of it when you said that she starts every sentence with right. And it makes you think of Dr. Evil, right, you know, starting every sentence. And of course, Mike Myers was a not so loose, you know, impersonation of Lord Michaels. Well, did you recognize that when you saw it? Did Mike Myers used to do that in the offices? I always heard, you know, apocryphally, everyone used to do a Lord Michaels.
You know, they always did do Lorne Michaels. I have to say, you know, people were always kind of hard on Lorne, like mock him. But I was like, what the hell? This guy gave us a huge opening. And it was so great for like my career. You know, I mean, I was on there. I didn't do much at all. Chris Rock used to call me Judgy Wudgy because whenever there was a judge, you're like, Siobhan, we have a judge costume that fits Siobhan. Right. And then like I was a sorority girl. I never really did that much. But, you know, the guy, I mean, let's face it, the show's been around forever. He's genius and it opened up so many doors, but people like love to mock him, which is funny. You can mock him with the best of them, but, and maybe I'm jealous because I never really could do imitations. I could do Katherine Hepburn. And that was it.
Well, on a personal note, I started watching SNL in 1990. I was, I don't know, 11 or 12. And within a year it was easily one of the most important things of my life. I mean, this is 1991. I'm putting VHS tapes and programming the VCR to record SNL, watching it the next morning. I'm 12 years old. And you were a big part of that season. You might say, I didn't do much. You did more than Chris Rock. Chris Rock was not very well used in that first season. So, you know, you were a big part of that cast.
No, listen, I like I said, there's stand-ups and then there's actors. And it was my dream to get on that show. And it was, you know, it's every week. It's different. So you'd be in knots thinking, am I going to get on? Am I going to get on? So, but, and it opened so many doors for me. I was just so, so lucky. And now with the movie with Rushed, people, I've been had all these interviews and they're like, so interesting how you were a sorority girl on Saturday Night Live. Now you're writing about fraternity. That's Can you talk about that? And I was like, I wish I was deep and there was a connection, but there isn't.
Do we figure out if Cuomo's got this, if there's happy interpreters and morose interpreters and bad news?
Did we figure that out?
I think there should be.
Before I rudely interrupted.
No, yes. I to my knowledge, they just the one speed. But remember when who was it? It
Lizzo was, or no.
Oh, you're talking about
Megan V.
Oh, the Stallion.
Yes.
Yeah, if you could pull up that clip, that was amazing. But
oh, yeah, WAP.
The person who stole the show at every, like, COVID press release for our state, for Newsom and Garcetti, it was this fabulous black woman who really stole the show, and everybody loved her. She had so much personality, way easier to watch than Newsom. And it could sort of catapult you into a certain kind of stardom.
All right, but we're down with my three shots of Jaeger.
I love it.
Or off script.
I'd tune into the State of the Union for that.
Yes,
absolutely.
Me too.
Well, some good news with FDA approval. Pfizer has been FDA approved for the COVID-19 vaccine. The mRNA vaccine got an emergency use authorization in December, of course, we know. The full approval was expected. Officials hope it will alleviate some concerns from hesitant people because a poll said that 30% of the people who haven't been vaccinated would be much more more likely to get it. If it got approval, well, we have it. And though it doesn't actually change a lot legally, many businesses were waiting for it so they could say, so they could basically mandate employees to say, you got to get this or you can't work here.
I think it's going to be like, you know, you ask someone, can you pick me up from the airport? And they go, I wish I could, but my back's out. And then you, if you sent a chiropractor to those people's homes and adjusted their back, and then you call them the next day and I go, how about that ride? And they'd go, well, my front's out now. Like, I think people who don't want to get vaccinated were using the whole FDA, whatever. Most of these people are people that have probably bought, like, bootleg Tylenol with codeine or something from a guy in a park or something. I say they were saying that. I don't think we're going to get a spike in vaccine.
Boost.
I do not foresee
I think you're
that.
100% right. It reminds me of when you made that great observation decades ago about the morning after pill and how when you know the religious people were like, wait, you know, no abortions, you know, no birth control, whatever. Like, well, the morning after pill works different. This should solve all of our problems. Like, no, we're still against it. Like, okay, what are you really against?
Yeah. That's how they are.
Well, Hobby Lobby makes a damn fine craft, but I'm wondering how it's going to work because they were one of the stores that said, you know, it's against our religious beliefs. We're not including birth control in our employees' insurance. And I am curious what their vaccination stance is.
That'd be interesting.
Yeah, I've never seen a Hobby Lobby. I couldn't tell you where one is.
Oh, Joann's Fabrics, Michael's. When you're doing all
stores,
your
right?
own wedding centerpieces, I have been to every one of them.
Yeah. Are there inflatable centerpieces?
It's gotta be.
No.
All right, then I'm out.
Inflatable?
He just bought like a chub pack of 80 and just hit them with the compressor and just put them right there. Yeah. You know, sprinkle a little baby's breath or something on there. Or angel's
ships
breath.
In a box this big.
Right, you get 80 of them, hit them with the tank, push it out.
That's
there.
That's horrific.
At the end of the night, you throw them in, put a candle on them, put them in the pool.
Give them a Viking funeral.
Yeah, that's right. I don't know. Maybe it's not classy, but it's practical.
This will be a classy affair. Some hot Mayim Bialik news to piggyback on what we were talking about yesterday. She'll be the first guest host of Jeopardy. We're doing the guest hosts again. Thank you, Mike Richards. Now that he's stepped down, that's according to Hollywood Reporter. She's scheduled to tape 3 weeks. That's 15 episodes when production on the syndicated daytime show resumes this week. Additional guest hosts are expected to be announced now that Mike is out. So we got to do this again. There was, what, like 11 or 12 guest hosts? And now we're going to go through the whole vibe again.
My thing with all this stuff was all you got to do is weather the storm for 3 news days. Mm. Or by the way, or depending on the timing, if there's God knows what goes down in Afghanistan, if someone True. Starts shooting or something, this story is so yesterday's news. If you just suck it up for 1 day or 2 days,
yeah,
you know, I don't know
right.
why everyone's apologizing and stepping down all the time. Same with the Bachelor host and all this kind of, just you ride it out for 3 days and we're done. Something's going to happen in that time period.
You're right. And if anyone should know that, it would be executive producer of Jeopardy, Mike Richards. Like, did
yes.
he tell himself to do it? The only thing I don't understand is it's not like he's a household name. We had Aaron Rodgers want a job, Mayim Bialik, LeVar Burton, all these people that we love. And coincidentally, the EP suddenly names himself host.
But is Aaron Rodgers legitimately interested in the gig,
idea.
Or is he just want to come, you know, get a first class flight out to
wear
Hollywood?
Wear some glasses and a vest.
Hobnob it a little bit.
Probably.
You know? Because I don't know who wants the job. I mean, LeVar Burton probably
for sure.
would have taken that gig. I don't know. It's a forever. You're going to get compared to Alex Trebek, and you're not him. That's going to be the first decade of that job. But it's a pretty sweet gig. And those shows, you know, if people just want to know schedules, some schedules are tougher than others. Like SNL's probably a tough schedule. Those shows you gang tape like 4 shows on a Friday, like the game show. That's how you're. How do you think you get Alec Baldwin to host Match Game and all this kind of stuff? Because they back the fucking Brinks truck up to the house and they gang tape. And it's like, can you work?
You can't walk away from that.
Can you work 9 Fridays a year for $13.7 million?
Indeed,
yeah, I think I could pull that off. Yeah.
You're absolutely right. I don't know if we have that that sign language thing, but you guys can Google it.
The thing you said that made me think of it was you said you'll always be compared to Trebek, which is true. You're always going to be upheld to that standard of Alex Trebek, kind of like coming to the new cast on SNL. You know, it's like, oh, the new cast, not as good as the last one. Well, maybe they will be.
Right.
Maybe they'll be even better.
All right. Sorry, Gina.
All right. Something delightful happened on ESPN. Well, that's my opinion. I don't know if the two of you sports fans are going to find it as delightful as the rest of America. But ESPN surprised viewers over the weekend with a little unexpected treat. After airing MLS soccer in the afternoon, ESPN switched and started airing Corgi Racing on their main channel. It appears the race was a rerun of the Corgi races at Emerald Downs Racecourse in Auburn in Washington State. It
That's
was
a
first,
lot of people.
Oh,
there.
Yeah. First broadcast in July, ESPN viewers were left baffled by turning this on and seeing it, ultimately overjoyed. This is the final heat, the big winner. Let's watch the final heat of the Corgi races.
Corgi's
and the flag is up. And Rye came flying off the mark to the Corgis, roar of the crowd.
That's
Angus
right.
The inside and chance, Angus. And Angus has done it again.
Corgis
Angus, a defending
the queen
champion
loves Corgis.
From 2019. He found a second wind.
So thank you, Angus. Thank you, ESPN. Must have been a very slow sports day.
Who are the people that can do so much with their dogs?
I have no
my
idea.
Dog
got me, man.
Lays there, farts, and then rolls over. He doesn't move.
He's service to no one dog.
His name, the only thing he will recognize is the word treat.
Right.
You can yell his name 35 times. He just looks at you. You know, Phil, you know, even with the mean voice, like, Phil, I'm serious now. He just looks at you, and then at some point you have to go, treat, and he'll go, okay, and it gets up, and he'll start moping into the house. But these people, they're showing their dogs, mm-hmm. they're racing. The greatest dog's the lumberjack competition dog, where they're jumping off the
logs,
pier.
Yeah.
The 22 feet, they launch themselves off the end. I mean, this should be an Olympic sport.
It's awesome because they run and run and they jump and their legs are like frozen in the air.
They run down a pier, yep. And it's usually labs, I guess, and then they just launch themselves off a pier that's about 3 feet above the water. And I don't know what the record is, 21, 23 feet. Like, they sail. I mean, that's a fucking dog.
It's majestic. I can get behind that because it's not like circus animals with a bullwhip and a chair. These dogs are having fun.
Yes. But who are the people that have this much time to invest in the dog?
Don't know.
Does anyone have the person in the neighborhood who's the super responsible dog walking their own dog? You know, they have a noise or a treat
or
a little, they have a little fanny pack mm-hmm. with some giblets in it or something, and they're like, stop yeah. at every curb and every intersection mm-hmm. and look. And then if the dog starts walking, they yank the mm-hmm. chain. Like, who needs this kind of dominion over a pet? You take yeah. the dog out, you shit the dog, you pick up the shit, and you go back in the house, you watch TV.
Yeah.
That's your relationship.
There's no reason to be fulfilled. I forgot. I know somebody whose mom is a champion frisbee, like, dog show trainer.
Oh, lesbian.
With the frisbees.
Let's be honest.
And their dogs are obedient, and they're down, and they're, you know, world-class performers. But yeah, I don't know where you find the time for that kind of thing.
The ultimate use of the dog is the frisbee guy who launches the frisbee and then gets down in the prone position.
Well, the dog jumps off his back.
Launches himself yeah. off. He uses the guy like a pommel
yes.
horse
free
and
yes.
launches himself for the frisbee.
That is awesome.
Yes.
Watch this. Should you a treat? Treat, come here. Treat. You got to get a load of this dog. She's so ugly. She's pretty. Come here. Treat.
We're looking at a...
The funny thing with the dogs when you start spelling things out.
Yep. Oh, look at that face.
Oh, he likes... She'll only come to treat, so she totally relates.
Wait, are we talking about like a husky chihuahua?
It's like a corgi Siberian husky.
That's literally... Okay, that's so funny, Gina, that you say that. So when we got her from the pound, you know, now people call it a rescue dog, but I was like, this is Mott. And my neighbor they said, what do you think she is? And I said, well, they told me they think she's husky and chihuahua. And, you know, I live in New Jersey. And my neighbor goes, oh, my God, I don't want to think about that.
Yeah, you got to
painful for the chihuahua.
I'm such a bad student that my son will go, like, Phil will be sitting in the same room and I go, He'll go, should we give Phil a TREAT? And I'll be like, hold on. I need it. Let me get my phone out. Hold on. Let me see. Slow down. Do that one again. Phil's already figured it out.
Phil is the funniest name for a dog.
I know. We'll find a good picture.
His name is Phil E. Cheesesteak.
Well,
that's hysterical. My dog is Trudy.
Oh,
I thought she sounded like a Jewish woman from Florida that lived in a condo.
And exactly. Yeah.
Exactly.
Siobhan, do you ever have anyone come up to you, or have a mutt too, and say, tell you definitively or confidently what your dog is actually a mix of?
Oh, my gosh. All the time.
That happens. We told someone else, a dachshund Jack Russell. Says, no, that's a rat terrier. Like, it is? Oh, yeah, that's a ratter. It's like, oh, okay, thanks.
My son and his girlfriend are so obsessed with their dog that they had the DNA done of the dog. And it was $300. Oh. And they found out it was 93% shih tzu.
Worth it. Well, do you guys know what ESPN Ocho is?
That's from the movie.
Nope.
Well, what movie is that?
Oh, the Ocho is from, you guys saw Dodgeball.
But it's real.
It's a real thing now.
The Ocho's real?
That's it's a real
find
channel.
Cornhole.
Yes.
Well, it's not a real channel, but ESPN2 on one weekend every year turns into the Ocho.
Yes.
Okay.
It was initially proposed. Okay, because they did it, and they do all these like fringe sports. They do sign spinning, cherry pit spitting, marble runs, putt-putt golf, arm wrestling, foosball, air guitar. They did a documentary on foosball, and another competition, this one caught my eye when I was reading the layout for the day. It's dodge juggling, and that's where a person on a team throws a dodgeball at 5 3-club jugglers.
No, I like that.
It's funny that we're making fun of the fringe sports, but you said they went from soccer
to corgi racing.
All this is better than soccer.
That's true.
Like, ironically, it's all an upgrade from watching people play soccer. Mm-hmm. Air guitar, corgi racing, dodge juggling. I would watch it all over soccer.
The weekend
I have post-traumatic stress from the name dodgeball, because I grew up in farm country. So the farm girls and boys were really strong, and I was like such a weakling. And they'd play dodgeball, and it would they'd be like hurt so badly when you got slammed with the ball.
Oh, yeah. That was the point.
Yeah, Dawson, sorry.
The weekend we started our dark week, the Ocho carried the grocery bagging championship.
I want it. I want in.
Certainly should have been doing color.
A can of
cream corn above vanilla wafers. I don't know about that, Stu. Back to you.
I'm sorry to call an audible here. Can we see a few minutes of that? Because I have thoughts. I have thoughts on how groceries should be bagged.
Brian was a champion bagger.
He was a bagger.
I'm very good.
Yes.
Ma'am.
All right, one more, Gina Grad.
All right, well... Adam, you have... there's Phil.
We'll show you a picture of Phil.
Look at his span.
Oh, my God.
From tail to hindquarter.
Yeah, he's lying on a queen-size bed, and he's taking the entire bed up.
Natalia seems thrilled.
She's got it going on. That's a beautiful bed.
It is.
This is Phil in a church in a fountain. And Phil, there's a guy who works at the church who just looks at me and goes, hey, we can't have your dog in our fountain. I'm like, I wish I had a choice. He gets into the fountain. It's like, well, we'll get him out of the fountain.
How?
Well, how do we do that? He's enjoying the fountain. He will be in the fountain until he's done enjoying your fountain.
You need a crane.
There's Phil sleeping while workmen dig out a tree stump. And he literally gets 2 feet away from their shovels.
Must he sit that closely to people working?
He'll sleep next to someone operating a Briggs & Stratton powered wet saw. Like, he'll just...
Does he have mono?
I don't know. All he does is he finds people who are doing things, and he lays down next to them.
In this podcast.
Right.
When we're podcasting.
He does it here all the time.
He just splays out wherever somebody's working, and at some point they'll feed him.
Oh, right.
I want to come back as Phil.
This is Phil's greatest moment is Dr. Drew and myself were doing a podcast in this studio, and Phil decided to check out what was going on in the booth, and he got up on his hind legs and he put his huge paws up on the, which is, by the way, is 4 feet above the ground.
Yeah.
And he decided to give a look-see to see what was going on inside of the booth where all the equipment was. So we'll put it up on adamcarolla.com.
But cute.
It's a funny picture, right?
It's great.
It's like, what's going on in there? Yeah, Drew's amused as well.
He wanted to see if there was any extra socks he could chew on.
Yes.
Get sick over. So, Adam, we all know you paved the way for this many years ago. Pioneer, people called you names. People burned you in effigy. But now it's cool not to shower. We know because between Ashton Kutcher and Mila Kunis.
As soon as we find good-looking people to engage in gross behavior, then all of a sudden it's good.
Yeah. Oh.
When ugly people and fat people go, I don't want to shower. They go, you fucking pig, you wouldn't. But when Ashton Kutcher announced, oh, more wisdom at the hem of the garment of, well, of his highness.
When you become traffic czar of this fine city, you need a good-looking proxy just to go on and like unveil all your policies.
That's
I was
true.
Like, yes,
you need
he's a
puppet.
Genius.
Yes.
Yeah, I'll get Kutcher.
Well, I have the patron saint of not bathing, and I think we can all agree that his name is Matthew McConaughey.
Oh, yeah. He's a genius.
He bathes in the sea.
He's getting in on the act. He says he doesn't bathe. He doesn't wear deodorant. And you want to know what he smells like? A man.
Yes.
That's what he says. He wants to smell like a man. Now, his Tropic Thunder co-star Yvette Nicole Brown was asked, what does he really smell like? What does that mean, a man? She says, he smells like granola and good living. She says, that's all I can say. He has a sweet scent that is just him. It's not musty or crazy. It's good living. But you got to be super hot, right? Or else
you got to be
disgusting.
Hot. You got to be rich and hot.
Yeah.
When I was young, there was I'm one of five, four girls and a boy. And, you know, we were Irish. So we didn't a lot of mince words. We never said I love you or anything like that. And so my father said to my brother, son, I have something for you. And he handed him a deodorant. And he goes, if you stink, no one likes you. He gave it to him.
Words to live by.
That was it.
That's all he needed.
All right. Well,
right to the point.
But once McConaughey does it, then it makes it okay for everyone else. But also, you kind of think of the how you interpret scent. So, like, if there's a homeless guy standing next to you and you caught a whiff of him, you'd be grossed out. Mm-hmm. But if that exact same scent was coming from McConaughey, you would not be grossed out.
Take a big whiff.
So he can pull it off.
Yeah.
All right, let's bring it home.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
I can't stop talking.
Gina. That was the news.
That's attractive.
With Gina
that's
Grad.
All right, let me hit Solo Stove here. Day or night, a smokeless fire pit from Solo Stove turns summer moments into unforgettable moments. This is a very nice piece of stainless steel quality construction. Start a little fire and use the Solo Stove, whether you're camping or just hanging out in your backyard. Solo Stove creates story-worthy moments without the fumes. Stainless steel construction designed to regulate airflow and burn more efficiently. So little smoke, you wonder, how come there's so much fire? Easy to light, just a few bits of starter. Lifetime warranty. You get a 30-day free return policy. This is a beautiful piece. You deserve it. Step it up. Summer's almost over. Get your stove going and let it roll into the winter and the fall and all else. It's Solo Stove, right, Dawson?
No one needs a reason to gather around the fire. Solo Stove just took away any reason not to. And now you can get $10 off when you use promo code Adam at checkout. Just go to solostove.com. And remember, you get $10 off when you use promo code Adam.
Rushed is the name of the movie, available in theaters as well as streaming on Apple and Amazon on Friday. And Siobhan Fallon Hogan is her name. So next time you're in L.A., come by and say hi to us.
Absolutely. I can't thank you guys enough, really, for having me on. I really, really appreciate it.
And thank you for contributing so much to the show. So I'm going to be live everywhere, Minneapolis, Acme Comedy Co., this weekend, and then I'm going to Catalina Island to do shows in Royal Oak, Michigan, and Kansas City, Missouri, and Solana Beach out here at Belly Up, Chicago, Park West. I'm everywhere. Just go to AdamCarolla.com. And until next time, this is Adam Carolla for Siobhan Fallon Hogan and Gina Grad and Bull Bryan saying mahalo.
You better start praying or you're going to hell, you idiots.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow us on the Twitter at Adam Carolla. You can catch Gina Grad on the podcast Easy Listening, Bald Brian on the Film Vault, the rest of us on the Water Cooler. Leave us a voicemail on the show at 888-634-1744. And get your tickets to see the Ace Man. They always sell out. So get them now at AdamCarolla.com.
Hey, Geico, do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, right? You know, it's hard work out there. Owning, renting. You want to save some money? How about you bundle? Bundle your policies at Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you got so much to do already. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. That is geico.com today. That's geico.com.
Hey, all you fine people out there. JB Smoove here. You know, life can get you down sometimes. Maybe you lack a sense of purpose, no drive to win, and no inner peace. That's why you need to listen to my new podcast with Team Coco. It's called May I Elaborate? Daily wisdom from me, JB Smoove. And it's going to change your life. Every day on May I Elaborate, I read a new quote from one of those page-a-day calendars, and then I go in. I explain these quotes, and then I apply them to your life so you can level up as a human being. This show will keep you motivated and inspired so you can be the best you you can possibly be. Now imagine waking up each day with a pep talk from me, dropping these precious jewels in your damn ear. Woo! You can't lose! So join me Monday through Friday on May I Elaborate. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts. Make me your daily routine and watch your life change. Wake up, fool! And don't make me come and get you. Ha ha!